Okay. Welcome to A Course in Miracles. We're going to work on some metaphysics again tonight. You know, we're up into chapter 21, we're in the last third of the text. And there are a lot of wonderful deep explorations that we can make. And you could really only do it with other people who are studying the book. You know, this is the kind of things we're going to discuss tonight are pretty far reaching. We'll see how it goes. You know, of course we'll discuss whatever comes up, but if we do get a chance to go where this particular paragraph is leading, then you will be invited to really feel is the correct word. The work we do with A Course in Miracles is indeed thinking. You know, you read and it's your mind, and it's about undoing your mind patterns, your addiction to the complete belief in separation. However, because of what you actually are, and because of what's doing the investing and what's really going on, the thoughts are not sufficient for the miracle to have its corrective effect. We have thoughts as a tool. We have words as a tool. And the words allow thoughts that are unique to each of you because of what you are. The fact that we can join on these same words, come out with the thoughts which lead to experiences that really are unique to each of us, is amazing. But that's only, you know, I'll skip the details of that. I think you know what I mean. But where we get to that for you individually now, for you personally, you get a feeling. Sometimes you read these words or you have a holy instant, and it's a journey beyond words. And it's more than the thought. And it's not the same feeling you have with your body. Those of you who have had success in meditating and breathing that spiritual air that you get from being really, really present, you know what I'm talking about. There really aren't words for that. But it's more like a feeling than a thought. But it's not like a feeling that the body has. You see how difficult it is to put words to this. And yet, it's that level of certainty, that feeling of certainty, that journey beyond words, the holy instant where you somehow have returned to your spiritual awareness. You have a spiritual perspective and you kind of feel it. Not like the body feels. It is beyond the body. The body is a representation of a thought. The body is a manifestation of an invented belief system that's wonderful. It's just wonderful. It's not true. This is you're waking up from it seeming to be true. It doesn't mean you throw it out. It doesn't mean it disappears. You, as the Course says, you love the world because you made it. It doesn't make it more real. You've made it like you draw something on a chalkboard. Beautiful painting. Suddenly it exists now on the canvas. in 3D even. It's beautiful. Colors. It's not true. And for you to pursue something as shallow as this existence as truth can only be frustrating and chaotic. It's very limited to the realm of the body and the capacity of the brain. When you go beyond the capacity and the familiarity of the brain, there's a different sensation. Here I am, you know, trying to go beyond words again. There's a different sensation. A spaciousness. It is a sense of being that does not fit in your body. This is touching on your spiritual awareness. All of us have had it, even those who are not on a spiritual path, they didn't have somebody there to talk them through it. So, you know, they didn't know what was happening. But because of what you are, you're never not that. You're never not what you are. You've very nicely become unaware of it. We touch with a holy instant this true self. And you have a glimpse of the eternal nature of your being, perhaps. And it's a surprise because the way you get to your eternal nature, your true self, is by denying the very block, time, for example, or space, take your pick, or the idea of other, but that's just a manifestation of time and space. By denying that, so it's an undoing, isn't it? You don't actually do something to have what I'm talking about, this spiritual awareness, this true self-awareness that goes beyond what the brain feels, thinks. You see, I'm struggling quite a bit to find words that could possibly make sense. Yet, any of you who have successfully entered into the light or come into the exact present moment between the moments, the holy instant, you know what I'm talking about. Or those of you who have had a fantastic experience in your body, like a car wreck, or like an explosion, or like saving somebody else's life. I've done this, and it was just the last second, and I happened to be able to do this. Or times when I've saved my own life, and it's so much attention is happening, and then there's a timelessness when it's done. Or the holy instance with A Course in Miracles. More and more consistently with this workbook, for crying out loud. But I think people who are not on a spiritual path have also had timeless moments when they've fallen only because of a abandonment of the ego world. For just an instant, the world disappeared. It can also happen in ecstatic moments of love. Moments when you find the tears just pop out of your eyes. It might be even during a movie you're deep into, or when you're in a romantic moment with somebody and they looked at you and you felt honesty like you've never felt before. And you just step out of self and other. You step out of time just for a moment. Just many times, see, where it happens, but you wouldn't recognize it. Now, with A Course in Miracles, we're guided to have these moments, to become more accustomed to going beyond the body, beyond your brain. We can use thoughts and words to eliminate the noise. You could use meditation to set up a propensity or propitiousness so that you can step out of the body for a moment. And when you do, I think everybody here recognizes that even for an instant somewhere in your life, you did. Or maybe you do every morning. I don't know. But when you do, each time you have a holy instant, like what I'm just trying to describe, it is a return to sanity, a return to truth. It becomes a foundation that for each of those seconds become more, for you, anything like my experience, they become more real than the world ever has. Those few moments through your life are more real than anything the world has ever offered. This has been my personal experience. And I've heard others say it as well. So I'm hoping you all can relate to that. It's not required for tonight's studying, but it is where it goes. You've heard me, if you've been with me for a while, you've heard me use this analogy. It's like you're in a very dark, large, dark warehouse. It's so large it echoes inside. Completely dark. You look down, it's dark. You look up, it's dark. Left and right, it's dark, it's dark. It's dark everywhere. And then somebody, what is it? 300 feet away. So big is this warehouse. They strike a match and it goes out. How much of your attention after so many years getting familiar with a limited world or this dark warehouse, is why my extreme example is it's dark, completely dark. Suddenly the spirit ignition happens. Suddenly a lightness of being occurred to you in your meditation or in your Course in Miracles lesson or in some of these beautiful words and these phrases that will just turn your whole world around. God is in everything I see because God is in my mind. What? Did that do it? Was that your moment? Or I know a longtime student that his moment was Lesson 21, I think it is. And it said, I'm determined to see. And he really struggled with that lesson. And the next lesson said, I'm determined to see differently. And he got it. He found the capability, the capacity, and the promise all fulfilled in just those words. And his spiritual life was born and he never looked back. He knew that freedom was his to own. Was that it for you? Who knows? But it's like a small light. And once it occurs, even if it only occurs once, can never be forgotten. This is what a spiritual awakening is. A genuine spiritual awakening, once it occurs, it's more real than anything the world ever promised. It's more free than anything the world ever promised. It may be very simple. You might even call it boring. But freedom means rest. Rest means freedom. Peacefulness, as the Course describes, it's the goal of the book because from peace comes every other genuine experience you can possibly want. From the ground of peace, now, from that ground of peace, you can trust. You can share. You can have joy. You can love and be loved. Do you recognize that none of that happens when you're not at peace? If you're afraid, if you're worried, anything involved, all those things have something to do with loss or fear. So that's why the Course says of itself, its goal is peace. But peace is not the end, it's the beginning. It's the door through which you go. That's why I say when you discover your just a moment of your true being, it's a door you go through, like the light in the warehouse. Now I'm describing this big dark space, and suddenly a small light comes up. All your attention goes to that corner. Even though the light is gone, you're saying, I saw it. What did you see? I saw a light. What was it like? It was just light. But tell me what it was like. Well, it was not dark like the whole rest of this warehouse. I don't understand what you're saying. I'm not sure I can put it in words, but I know it. I felt it. And when I saw this light, in contrast to the darkness, I knew something. I knew something greater than all of the darkness ever promised me. This is a spiritual awakening. This is a spiritual perspective. This is your home calling you home. Now, when you have these moments of holy instant moments, there's something else that you might notice about them. At least I certainly have. I come away and it is the, I don't know what the word is. I don't even know what the word would be to say the opposite of alone, the opposite of separate. I'm not sure what that word or description is. But that was my overwhelming experience. My thinking at the level of what you know as Andrew is so discreet. There's all sorts of room for alone. But my experience of wholeness, connectedness, it was not at the level of Andrew, whatever, you know. I can say I'm struggling for words, but so this is what A Course describes as thoughts you think with God. It sets you up so that you can, yes, thank you, Cecilia. It sets you up so that you can get closer and still closer to what I'm describing, so that one day, maybe it's your deathbed, you know, happens a lot, because people at your deathbed finally let go of all this dreaming, see, and they're preparing for their last breath and think, well, what the hell? I'm not even thinking about anything. Oh, like that can happen. Why wait? Why not enjoy what you have made here? Tim.
This is so spot on. In the early morning, I sometimes have thoughts, quote unquote, that are endless variations of the ego telling me that I'm bad or I'm broken or I should have made better decisions. I call them the parade of devils. And now I'm half aware. I'm sort of lucid dreaming. And I want to see this differently. So I choose to set it aside. I don't fight with it. And then another bad image comes up and I go, nope, that doesn't feel good either. Not interested in it. And then another one. And then they transition to these little quick thoughts, these little dream vignettes that are total nonsense. Like I'm going Alice down the rabbit hole, and suddenly I'm looking at the, you know, the teapot and the queen and the Cheshire cat. And then I say, where did that come from? And you know what? I'm not interested in that either. And then it's replaced by another thing. And then this morning, I go like this, right in the middle of my forehead. I am not thinking at all. It's right out of the course. Those thoughts don't really exist. I am not thinking right now.
That's it, brother.
I've read that line over and over and over, and it's never really caught. And this morning, it was there. I'm not thinking. Unless it's okay. And the acid test is always, does this feel good? Does it feel healing? Do I smile? Am I helpful to others? Am I helpful to myself? That's the acid test. Oh, so now I'm thinking with God. Maybe these are the kinds of thoughts I want to continue to water and give sunshine and cultivate like that.
That's it, Timothy.
And so as I went walking today in a path that I used to go down all the time in New Jersey, New York State, I just said, it's the present moment. That's it. It's a nice day. It's 60 degrees, unbelievable for December, whatever. And I am simply going to walk down this favorite path next to this beautiful brook. And that is it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to think about the future or the past. I came out here to help my mom bury her partner of 16 years. She's 85 years old. I mean, she's done wonderfully, but I mean, there's been all of these thoughts of maybe that was part of my impetus to have a little bit of a moment. But, you know, all forms of suffering are like dreaming that your child has died. I mean,
you
take confusion that wears you out. And when you run into misfortune, you know, just simply look at it as confusion. That's all.
You know, in the course, I'll show you where the course has a couple of sentences. And Tim basically said them. But, you know, how do you know when you have the thoughts like Tim had? He had dismissal thoughts to dismiss what was certainly not worthy and not valuable. And he thought, oh, my God, it was nothing. I let it go and it was gone and I didn't even mean anything. And then he says, what am I doing? And he shows freedom in that moment. Turn to page 494. We don't usually go there just for these couple sentences, so don't be distracted. Page 494, last paragraph on that page. And the last few sentences in the last paragraph on that page. One of the most amazing psychological, practical self-help two paragraphs in the whole book are 21 and 22, but we're not here for those. we're just here for this last few sentences in 22 after what Tim just told us. And hopefully, Jacqueline, you know that I'm going to ask you maybe if you would teach us your recent experience. I'm just going to warm you up a little bit. Maybe you will. We'll see. I'll give you a second to feel that out. Look at 22. And look at the last few sentences. Look at sentence 6 in the middle of the paragraph. How can you know whether you chose the stairs to heaven or the way to hell? And Timothy says, dreaming about losing your children. Just rotten. Why would you do that? You do that a lot. You dream of loss a lot as a body. But we're turning that around. The miracle is the healing of the mind from going down to going up, from going dark to going light, from going material to going spiritual, from going away to coming home. These are all ways that describe the miracle and its directionality. So here we are. How can you know whether you chose in this thought that you had the stairs to heaven or the way to hell? Well, quite easily, he says. How do you feel? Is peace in your awareness? Are you certain which way you go? Do these thoughts make you feel a lightness of being? Well, certain, then you know. How easy is that, right? And are you sure the goal of heaven can be reached? Let me remind you. When you see heaven in A Course in Miracles, it's code for understanding. It's code for knowledge. It's code for arriving at knowledge. That is what heaven is in A Course in Miracles. Arriving at knowledge. Light is code for understanding. It leads to heaven, which is arriving at knowledge. You see, knowledge, nobody can take away from you. You don't need faith. You don't need trust. You don't wait. Knowledge is complete in itself. That's why it's called knowledge. What an amazing sentence. He says, are you sure the goal of heaven can be reached? And when you have a type of freedom that Timothy described, you saw it on his face. You saw him in the relief and the absoluteness in his movement of his experience. He had a holy instant for sure. He had a miracle about his own thoughts, a shift in perception about what he was thinking, how he was thinking, about the very feelings that were driving the crazy thoughts that were happening. He abandoned them easily for not being true, not being valuable, recovering the power of his mind.
Andrew, I caught those suckers. The emperor had no clothes. I caught them naked.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes. Well done.
It could make me cry. I tell you, all day long it's gone on. I had to be a part of this group tonight.
Good. Glad you joined us, because it's an important, we needed to have you help us teach tonight. The promise is true that with your own thoughts, you can go through a door out of this world. That has to be true. See, if it's your own thoughts that close the door behind you, see? So that's why this is so important. And so, Jacqueline, would you be willing to tell us? Oh, good. I think she is. Teach okay. us, Jacqueline, what happened to you?
Well, I shared that one of my challenges is every time I encounter an interaction with a person, that's my biggest challenge, you know, for, and, but then every time I encounter somebody and things are brought up, it's my opportunity to see what's inside of me to be healed, what's in my mind to be healed. And so I spoke to my friend 2 nights ago, and she was telling me about her mother's experiences in the hospital, which were pretty scary. And it brought up all of a sudden I realized I had this whole body of experiences and thoughts and judgments about my mother's journey for a few years in hospitals and nursing homes. And I had been doing a lot of inner healing and, you know, going to my mind and looking for those kind of things and asking Holy Spirit and healing a lot. And I thought, oh my gosh, there's this whole body that I had set aside and I kind of denied it. You know, like, why didn't I see that before this while I was looking? So there it was. So that's the gift of an interaction with another person. And so, you know, I had a lot of charge on it. Not so much now, but still it was there. I mean, they almost killed her a couple times, you know, in the hospital stuff. And so I turned over the Holy Spirit, and I was given this, I was shown something that I wouldn't have thought of in my own mind. And all of a sudden I saw myself and my mother and all the people in the hospitals and all of us as robots. And it was actually a vision, almost squared off metal robots. I mean, it was kind of interesting, you know, it wasn't even the modernized human looking robots. And I just realized, well, you can't blame robots. I just had a that image that was given to me somehow was perfect for me. And it's coming up now daily. I mean, I met a woman asked here in my community to walk. And so we went for a walk. And you know, she told me her story. I told some of my story too. And her story is pretty, you know, intense. But I, you know, so I listened to it first kind of as my personality. But then I get the thought, well, they're all robots. I'm a robot. And somehow I get a freedom from, you know, they say we're actors on stage, but I understood it. But this image that Holy Spirit gave me really worked for me or helps me a lot. Yeah. Thank now, you. That's only one aspect of the whole healing dream. There's so much more because Christ's vision, you know, that's not including Christ's vision. That's just including a way to look at this world and what's going on in it. So.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Beautiful.
You're welcome.
So if one of us was sitting next to her when she was having this robot translation, the people who actually mistakenly deprived her mother of oxygen when they were trying to give her oxygen, do you see? They practically almost killed her in the hospital, doing their best, happens, right? The same people, Jacqueline's translated into just them being their discreet persons. Like she is. She knows her own life. She knows that she knows what she knows and doesn't when she doesn't, makes mistakes and does the best she can. And so are they. Robots running their program as best they can. She forgave them, all of them, instantly. She forgave them. I can't judge you. I can't expect anything different from a robot. Freedom, you see? She went beyond words, as Tim did when he caught his thoughts and busted them. Oh my God. He busted not only the thoughts, he busted the thing that was making the thoughts. Tim was able to arrest and surrender a pattern habitually that's running. He caught it. And a sense of simplicity and freedom washed over him. So I ask you, in that moment, I ask you, you know, how do you feel in that moment from that 494 piece? And in that moment of simplicity, do you think it's possible that there's more simplicity? Have you just glimpsed something that's really true and therefore reaches far beyond your limited memory and brain and imagination? Yes.
But yes. The things that are true are so far beyond what I can even dream about at this point that I just understand that there's a whole nother way of being that's much truer, that is true, that I haven't even come close to yet. I picked up a corner of a rug.
Yes. Yes. Okay. But it's there. You know somehow because you picked up that corner of the rug and the way that it made you think and feel for even a moment that heaven can be reached. See? That's a huge, huge step from somebody who's been so addicted to being a body and surviving as a better, happier body. That the idea dawned on you that heaven beyond the body can be reached. That's enough for an entire lifetime. Of course, there's more. Jason, what do you got?
Well, I was just thinking kind of where Tim was at, and I've been at that place where this is enough.
Tell me more.
I can't. It's like it was ineffable for you earlier. It's just that this is enough. Whatever I was experiencing at the time, I don't need more, I don't need less, but this is enough.
Beautiful.
Kind of like this is all there is.
Yeah.
And you don't have a choice to judge it as being, I don't like it, I do like it. You know, we just add 1% more sugar, a little bit more caffeine, whatever.
Yeah. Yes. You know, Jason, see if this maps to your, this is enough. One of the lessons dropped me into this moment. I was sitting on top of my tree. Most of you know that I studied my Course in Miracles sitting on top of a tree, right? So I had these wonderful memories of a chair, literally chair 150 feet up on the top of a redwood. And studying my lessons, and one of the lessons says, actually, this is in the text, but one of the sentences in the Course in Miracles says, that in no single instant does anything happen. In exact instant, you get exactly present, nothing happens. Comma, you can't even die in a single instant. That one sentence pushed me into an awareness. I just had an awakening right around that, in that moment, sitting in that tree going, whoa, of course. In a single instant outside of time, right, you drop into being very, very centered. This is not only enough, it's all there is. In this very single instant, I would have to dream that there is more to be had. Possibly. You can't add anything to this present instant. You can't add anything to it. That would be some other instant, wouldn't it? You actually have completely now, in this very instant, all you can handle. All that you can afford, all that you've chosen, is arrived and in your hands. And it's more likely you're denying its magnitude than grasping it. And these holy instants show you this. I love what Jason said. Misako.
Excuse me. I think for me, the most cherished of those holy instant moment is when I'm engaged in a conversation with another human being. And for a while, I'm in my default position, right? I'm unconscious. And then when I'm fortunate enough to wake up, like, oh my God, where am I? I've been judging this person and I've got issues with this human being. And then in that moment, when I recognize it, then I choose. And this happens really quickly, right? So when I choose, now this is the most precious part, when I actually begin to see a transformation out there.
Yes.
But the reality is, there's nothing happening out there other than what's already happened, but it's all in here. And that's just so remarkable. I mean, I'm always humbled at that experience. And it never gets old. It's being in the moment, waking up and realizing, my God, there really is nothing in the world. It's all my story. It's all my interpretation.
Yeah.
So, choose, right? Choose wisely.
Do you see the circle she painted? She pointed at her head right after she said, things out there change. And then she pointed back here. Did you see that? The circle of experience. She changed her thinking. And then the world changed right in front of her. The circle, self-fulfilling prophecy, which takes us to tonight's reading very nicely. Thank you, Misako. Your thinking, your true thoughts, your spiritual awakenings, they are an inward journey as directly opposed to the outward journey of the world and of the dream of separateness and individual, separateness and separate beings. It's an inward journey. Yes, Barbara.
I would really like to know about that chair up in the redwood tree, because I don't know about it, but that, so sometime, if you can say something about why there's a chair up in the redwood tree, I would really like to hear that. But I am glad Misako said, referred to multiple experiences every time I have that experience, because that's what I've been thinking. My relationship to this book is multiple instants, right?
Yes.
It happens all the time. And they're stunning, each and every one of them. Yeah. And they happen often. And there's one I just had, and I kind of hang on to it for a few days. I can work it, in other words. And the one that I just had, can I read it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Please.
I was doing the workbook and I stalled maybe the last time I was here, and I haven't been here in a while. I checked back in a couple of weeks ago. I stalled somewhere in the workbook at around 100, less than 150. And it really bothered me because I had been cooking. And then I went off and taught for a couple of months, and I couldn't get back into the workbook. And it was distressing to me because I loved doing the workbook lessons, but I just kind of let the book guide me. You know, I let go of, okay, I can't do this. And so I'm not going to force it. I'm not going to feel bad or whatever. And so I just kind of start looking around to see what else calls to me. And I've come to the conclusion for me to default to the manual for teachers, because it's just the clearest. And it just, you know, you can read it one time and then and get a lot out of it. And then the next time it takes you deeper. And I don't know, my experience is just I'll read the same thing, but it takes me deeper every time. And so I was reading What Are the Characteristics of God's Teachers? It says, it can be said that the advanced teachers of God have the following characteristics. Number one, trust. And then it says, this is the foundation on which their ability to fulfill their function rests. And just, this is the foundation, took me deeper. Okay, so I already knew I was entering into one of those instances. Because it said, okay, this is foundational. This is important. Listen up and get what this has to say. And that the part that got me to the instant, the holy instant, is it said the teachers of God have trust in the world. And I haven't had trust in the world. I'm in this friggin' divorce for 2 years. And I have no trust in the world. I have zero trust. And it says the teachers of God have trust in the world because they have learned it is not governed by the laws the world made up. So I'm going deeper here. It is governed by a power that is in them, but not of them. It is this power that keeps all things safe.
Well said.
And when I read, it is this power that keeps all things safe, I had that experience that isn't of the body. It was, I'm safe. I can't be unsafe. There's a power in me, but isn't of me. And it's that power that keeps all things safe. Even if in the world it doesn't look safe or doesn't feel safe, it is safe because there's the power in me, but not of me. And that power keeps all things safe. And it says, it is through this power that the teachers of God look on a forgiven world.
Wow.
And then you say, yeah, it's forgiven. You feel the forgiveness. And that's the instant.
Atta girl, Barbara.
That's, and there's just tons of them.
There's tons of them. The book's loaded with it.
It is.
It explains.
Every time you read it or read it a different time, it'll grab you and take you deeper. It's interactive.
Yes, and you are open enough to hear it.
It's because I need it.
You bet. You're done. You'd rather have peace.
Right.
You'd rather be safe.
Absolutely.
You'd rather remember how it is as possible you could be safe.
Exactly. And that you can't be unsafe.
Can't be unsafe. In other words, is she saying that nothing real can be threatened and nothing unreal
exists?
Is that what
she's
saying?
Herein lies the peace of God. Yeah.
Exactly what she's pointing to.
Exactly.
Andrew, I'll keep it very short. After this morning's experience, I had a chance to go walking on the Appalachian Trail for 3 or 4 hours. And what I did was play with the fact that whatever thought is in the front and center spotlight of my mind is the filter through which I then see an entire world. So if I think of myself as Timothy the physician and my profession, all of a sudden I imagine this whole world out there and it's got its pluses and minuses. And if I think of myself as Timothy, the body that, you know, I wish was slimmer and trimmer and all the rest, then that colors a whole different world, you know. And so it's the thought that I'm allowing to occupy center stage that then colors and creates everything I think is external to myself. And yes. So I just consciously get, I said, oh, well, what if I put this slide in? You know, I bet you I get this. And sure enough, everything's purple. Now it's all pink. Now it's all, you know, and it all had to do with what I was allowing to be front and center in my consciousness. My God, and I say that word carefully, be careful, monitor closely what it is you are allowing to sit in the front of your awareness. And you're not your brain, by the way. It's another organ. You are your awareness. You are, you know.
Yep.
It's your experience.
That's
it. It's your consciousness.
There are two perspectives and only two to observe this world. The ego mind or the Holy Spirit mind. Ego mind or the Christ mind. That's it. That's it. That's the whole menu.
Yeah.
And you'll know which one you're thinking from how you feel. Tim's describing, he dropped one and picked up the other.
Yeah.
Barbara's describing, she went straight to the absolute nature of truth. It's not threatened. You can't threaten what is. There is a power that's behind everything that appears to be volatile. That is not volatile. It's just power. And from that perspective, you're not only completely safe, you're the definition of is. Wow, mind-blowing thoughts. But from that perspective now, nothing can be lost. That leads us again. Thank you, Timothy. It leads us again right to tonight's paragraph. So let's take a look and see what Jesus has to say. Turn to page 459 and in the text, and we're going to look at paragraph 3 tonight. This is a metaphysical section, reason versus madness. And the chapter is reason and perception. Reason is a Course in Miracles term for, you know, sanity, right-mindedness, for choosing the correction, choosing health over sickness, choosing sanity over insanity, choosing spirit over material, etc., etc., etc. Reason. When Jacqueline noticed and saw everybody, including herself, as a robot, she shifted her perception. She shifted the perspective from which she was looking, just like Barbara did, reading that on page 9 in the Manual for Teachers, and Timothy did when he recognized his thoughts being these musings of nothing. He shifted, he saw what he was looking through and put that aside. Shifted your perception away from the unreasonable and found reason for a moment, found sanity for a moment. The perspective changed in each of their stories and their descriptions, and for Jason as well. The perspective changed, and all you had was the simple truth. All you had was the simple understanding now that you were like Masako with her friend. She was making her own life more difficult. Busy judging and analyzing this other person. And then dropped it. And found strength and happiness. Light. Lightness of being. You can't mistake the little bit of light in a dark room. It doesn't take much, is my point with that analogy. It does not take much. One little match strike after 60 years of darkness, boy, you aren't going to forget that. I took 60 as a round number looking over the screen. That's probably our average here, maybe.
Turned 60 last week, you sucker.
Oh, right, you're right in the median. Excellent. Happy birthday. Okay, look at paragraph 3. And Kenny, do you want to read for us?
No.
All right, thanks, sir. Thanks for thinking it over. I that was a nice... Okay, Deborah, I'm going to unmute you.
Twice already myself.
What? You did? Good.
I read it twice while I was waiting.
Bravo.
And I think I got it.
Excellent. Well, yeah, jump in and jump in and teach us the meaning of it anytime.
Oh, okay.
Deborah, would you read for us that paragraph 3?
No one can think but for himself, as God thinks not without his Son. Only we're both in bodies could be this. Only we're both in bodies could this be. Whew. Nor could one mind think only for itself unless the body were the mind. For only bodies can be separate and therefore unreal. The home of madness cannot be the home of reason. Yet it is easy to leave the home of madness if you see reason. You do not leave insanity by going somewhere else. You leave it simply by accepting reason where madness was. Madness and reason see the same things, but it is certain that they look upon them differently.
Oh, you can almost feel the certainty coming through these words. So, I'm willing to, without doing the count, I'll bet you this entire paragraph is written in iambic pentameter. Every single sentence. I haven't done the count, but sometimes I'll read a paragraph like this, or and I'll count it out, and it's perfect. The whole paragraph is perfect in iambic pentameter. And sometimes I think Jesus did that because he said, he was just, the concept was so clear, and he tried to slow himself down and put more words around it and repeat himself and make it poetic, because he knows what a difficult reach this is for the separate mind, but what a happy celebration it is for the healing mind. Let's look at it together. And the sentence that Deborah choked on is indeed a perfect iamb. It's a perfect iambic pentameter count. I counted it while she was reading it twice. Okay, no one can think but for himself. The word but, if that ever trips you up, just put the word only in there in place of but. But is handy because it has only one syllable, and if you're doing iambic pentameter, sometimes you need one instead of two. Shakespeare invented whole new words so he could write sonnets in iambic pentameter. At least there aren't new words in this book. No one can think only for himself. You see, one of the things we learn with A Course in Miracles is the idea that you can think only for yourself is the whole problem. You're not alone the effects of your thoughts, because you can't be alone. There is no yourself separate from everything. It's wonderful news. That's what Barbara touched on. She says, oh, wait a minute, wait a minute. There is a power in me that is not of me. Yes. Okay, so he's just stating a fact, but he's going to state it again and again and again in this paragraph. Look how he does it. He slows himself down. He says, well, as of course, God thinks not without his son. It's a big hint on the nature of God. The nature of God doesn't do anything without his son. You see, God is a noun, and nouns don't do anything. In creation, we're verbs actualized, and you are the verb of God. You are God's creation. You are God's son. You are the verb of God. So nothing, not even thinking, happens without you. Clue. It's a clue that's all over the book once you see it. Your function as you were created. So, of course, here Jesus has no problem saying, no one can think but for himself, of course, as God thinks not without his son. And then he says it again in a little different way. He says, only we're both in bodies. Could this be? And here's a metaphysics, another lesson in A Course in Miracles. See, bodies are the perfect tool so you can actually live out separation. They look unique, they communicate separately, they feel separately, they have distinct edge of your skin is where you stop and the rest of the world starts. I mean, it's separation. It's a little spaceship, your body. So you can travel around in space and time perfectly, separately. And another body appears to have a complete set of components separate from yours, and you can have separate thoughts as well. Well, the part of your mind that wrote this book sees through that illusion, knows of the oneness, it is a healed mind. And so that body says, well, God would have to be in a body too in order to have a thought, a separate thought without you. You would be in a body like you've been trying so hard to experience, and then so would God. He said, no, that's just not the way it is. Okay, sentence three. Nor could one, key word is one in this sentence, right? It should be underlined or capitalized or something. Okay. Nor could one mind think only for itself unless the body were the mind. Well, there is a quick distillation of what's really going on. There's a quick diagnosis of a dream. Then he kind of says it again. For only bodies can be separate and therefore, well, unreal. Remember I told you that the word sin in A Course in Miracles is, you can just put the word separation in there. Another thing that's impossible is that one thing be not itself. You're dreaming in separation of being pinched off from the whole, and that this pinched off part, you've given it a name and the life and memories and the social security number and things that, separation. You've tried to give it that. You had to make up a whole domain We don't have time for me to say this word, but I'm going to say it anyway. We do have time. We have plenty of time. You made up a whole domain where you could somehow feel your way separate. I'm going to tell you the name of that domain that comes to us in chapter 4. It's fighting words. I'm going to say it. It's fighting words. It's fighting words for a lot of other spiritual paths that don't do what A Course in Miracles does, in my estimation. The name of the domain that you have made where you can live out and prove and chase your individual separate existence is called consciousness. So many paths. Hail consciousness as the doorway to oneness. There's another path, Advaita, that really tries to wake up from that. And Course in Miracles is like Advaita. It's non-dual teaching. It's a really non-dual. We use terms of duality, but we're really pointing to oneness, right? A real oneness throughout this whole book. So rather than consciousness, you will find, I think, the higher teachings outside of Course in Miracles use the word awareness, like Tim did. They use the word awareness. This is much closer. This is a much better word for your being and your experiencing rather than consciousness, I say. But I digress just a touch. So for only bodies can be separate and therefore unreal. 5, the home of madness. That would be where bodies are your being, where your brain holds your essence. That's madness. But my goodness, have we worked that up on this planet, huh? We've really worked up a big effort to try to squeeze ourselves into these bodies and prove it. Wow. But that can't be the home of reason. Yet it is easy to leave the home of madness. This is only 2 letters, this next word. This is only 2 letters, this next word. But it signifies the holy instant that each of you are describing. The moment in your life somewhere when you took a pause out of time and space and said, whoa, there's something else going on. And you felt good about it. You felt peaceful about it. I call this spiritual ignition. A moment of spiritual ignition occurs, like that little light in the warehouse. And if it never lights again, it's no less for what it was. You can't forget it. The contrast in this world of a free moment, a free spiritual awareness, you can't deny it ever. It's part of, that's why it's good. I like the word awakening as well, applied to this. So here comes it, 2 letters, if. 2 letters, if you see reason. The whole book, all the lessons are setting you up so that you personally, in your own way, with your own words, like Timothy did, he was working around with his thoughts and he chose to see, it happened. He saw reason. Jacqueline saw reason. She has lived her whole life trying to reconcile love with what keeps pounding at her senses and the losses and the horrible things that happen in the world. And yet in her heart of hearts is love. Same with Barbara. She knows it's obviously there, but sometimes she doesn't look like it. Where's the love? She says. But then reason comes back, right? This is what the whole book is for, to drop you into just a few reasonable moments where you can now do what it says on page 218. Here, let's go there right now. Hold your finger on 459. We're coming right back. But I want you to see how simple this course gets when we look at it from this perspective. Go to page 218. Look at this. Another sentence where I just had an awakening. I was like, oh, man, is the whole book in one sentence? You know, it's one of so many sentences like that in this book. Look on page 218, paragraph 1, sentence 5. Right in the middle of paragraph 1. I mean, how can we skip sentence 1? Let's read sentence 1 also. It says, miracles are merely the translation of denial into truth. Thank you, Jesus. Kind of wondering what a miracle really was. He says, okay, I'll tell you, there it is. But that's not why we came to this page. We came to this page for sentence 5. The task of the miracle worker thus becomes what? In italics? What's your task? To heal your mind, to become aware again of your spiritual, your true self? What is it that you'll be busy doing? To deny the denial of truth. To simply allow honesty. This is what you're called to do. Let's read that paragraph while we're here. Albert, would you read that whole paragraph for us? It's a wonderful paragraph.
Which one?
Yeah, number one.
Miracles are really the translation of denial into truth. If to love oneself is to heal oneself, those who are sick do not love themselves. Those who are sick do not love themselves. Therefore, they are asking for the love that would heal them, but which they are denying to themselves. If they knew the truth about themselves, they could not be sick. The task of the miracle worker thus becomes to deny the denial of the truth, to deny the denial of truth. The sick must heal themselves, for the truth is in them. Yet having obscured it, it is the light of another mind must shine into theirs, because that light is theirs. Wait, what's that? That last word, theirs. Who's is that? The healer or the other person? Yet denying,
it's a circle of light must occur where the see. You don't think you're good enough. You. If you're sick, the word of Course in Miracles sick doesn't necessarily mean the body. I mean but it's really the mind. Even if it's the body, it's the mind. Timothy was beautifully describing an elaborate sickness of A Course in Miracles where he recognized he was just telling himself rotten stories. He was putting in the front of his mind, he said, in the forefront, he was putting this filter of ugliness and he was feeding himself perceptions that are just ugly. He said, nah, that's sickness. As you think, that's how you are. And so, you don't think, if you're, especially at the beginning of the book, you really don't think you're worthy of love or God's love or understanding awareness. You really feel heavy and dark. And so he knows that. And he says, the sick must heal themselves. Okay, that's, you know, really bad news. Yeah. And it's good news when you get it, because that means you heal. And it tells you the good news next. Because, you know, for the truth is in them. Nobody's going to come save you. That's the bad news. The sick must heal themselves because nobody's can heal them. Well, gee whiz, what's the good news? The good news is that what you need to heal you is in you already, pre-installed by the factory, waiting for you to access. Tim?
The good news is you can.
The power to heal yourself is within yourself. That's the bad news, good news. The bad news, nobody's going to drop a bliss bomb on you and do the work for you. They can't.
Yes, right.
Okay. But the good news is you've got what it takes to be your own savior.
Oh,
it's there in place. It just needs the tarp pulled off the top of it.
That's it. That's it.
Fantastic.
Okay, now the last sentence. Yet having obscured it, as we well have, the light in another mind, none of that's capitalized, is it? The light in another mind in your dream, light, though, is a beautiful, beautiful word. Remember I told you that light in A Course in Miracles means understanding? And so you're willing sometimes to give somebody else, maybe it's Eckhart Tolle or Jesus or somebody you look up to, maybe you're willing to give them light or understanding. And that gives you hope because somebody sees their way to free. Maybe it's Jacqueline tonight because Jacqueline or Timothy. Maybe it's a strength you saw in those two stories, or Barbara when she read that otherwise really hard to understand paragraph in the Manual for Teachers. But Barbara's like, no, this is it. Maybe you think it's you're borrowing strength from her because you've heard her tell stories and work before through difficulties, and Tim and Jacqueline and Masako and all. And yet they're strong tonight. You're allowing light to be in another mind. That's exactly what the sentence is saying. Okay? Yet having obscured it in you, the light in another mind must shine into theirs. This is back to you, the thinker. Because the light is your light in truth. You're not alone in the effects of your seeing. You're not alone in the effects of your thoughts. If you will give somebody else, and that's the whole function of Jesus now, the character Jesus in our story, is simply the part of your mind that has woken up to light completely. We give it a name because you're still stuck on separateness so much. We may as well give this a name. So we call it Jesus or the Holy Spirit. Luann. Hang on. I can unmute you. Hang on. Okay, go for it.
Can I explain it the way I understand it?
Would that be helpful? Please. Absolutely.
If you can see the light of reason in somebody else, that means that you can get it for yourself because you can see it somewhere else. You couldn't see it if you didn't have it yourself.
Maybe it's possible.
Yeah.
And then, when you recognize the power of this as you give, you receive, or another way to say it is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Another way of saying it is you really only recognize. Did you know that you never learn anything? Nothing new ever happens to you? Is that going too far off the reservation to have this discussion? You don't actually learn anything. You actually unlearn the faults. You don't really learn the truth. You actually unlearn the faults. Is that going too far off into another direction? But that's what Luann is discovering, and she's celebrating for us. If you allow somebody else to have the truth, it's you who are doing that, not them. You are recognizing the truth that you are assigning them or experiencing in them. You are recognizing that. They are not giving it to you. That's not happening outside of you. It's a wonderful truth to be aware of. Not necessary for us tonight, but it's a wonderful truth. Thank you, Luann. It's beautiful. Okay, back to page 459. We were just doing sentence 5. The home of madness cannot be the home of reason. Okay. 6, yet it's easy to leave the home of madness if you see reason. And that's what led us off to page 218 in my awakening on that sentence that, oh, he says your job as a teacher of God is to, now, of course, to deny the denial of truth. I think I can handle denial. That's an undoing, isn't it? I can deny the denial. I'm not denying the truth. I'm denying the blocks that are in the way of truth. The blocks to the awareness of truth's presence. It's my job. Wow, I think I could do that. You don't have to invent anything. You don't have to become suddenly different than you are. That's what the book is about, you know? And that's those workbook lessons, hour by hour, drop you into presence of mind to discover the power of your thinking, the responsibility of your thinking, and also, as Tim beautifully illustrated for us, how your own thinking can be an absolute barrier if you follow it. Or, as Muskaka was described when she flipped the script, your own thinking becomes your path to freedom. This is what salvation is in A Course in Miracles, is discovering that you do this unto yourself. Not, didn't happen to you. The whole world, as you see it, you can, here's another way to describe salvation in a clever phrase. You can give it up as easily as you made it up. Okay. 459, paragraph 3, sentence 7. You do not leave insanity by going somewhere else. Well, that could be 2 years of therapy. That one sentence, don't you think? No, Andrew. I need to completely leave my insanity just behind. I got to get away from it. I got to go change everything so I can have happiness somehow, somewhere else. That's what drugs do. Drugs allow you to leave behind, you know, your problems. The problem is you're only borrowing this other existence. And when you sober up, everything's back. Maybe worse now because of whatever the drugs did. Same if you change relationships when you're having a difficult time, really difficult time. Not the obvious. There are academic ways to look at a relationship where you really don't belong there, and it's not a big deal. It's obviously you don't belong there. I'm talking about the existential, the real hatred, difficult times. Those are circumstances where you can't leave that situation by getting away from it. Everywhere you go, there you are. Because in A Course in Miracles, sickness is wrong thinking. And so everywhere you go, you'll continue with your wrong thinking, and you will now redefine the new location and the new person with your same wrong thinking, and then you'll have your wrong relationship once again. It isn't the relationship, was it? So what do you think?
Or as a therapist would think, if you have a relationship and you have it in your mind, it never goes away until you can figure out a way to leave it behind.
Well done. Well done. So here it is. That's why I pulled out the therapy phrase. Luann is a therapist. You do not leave insanity by going somewhere else. You see, insanity, poor thinking, is a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you describe things from a fearful perspective, they will always be fearful. If you somehow awaken and get the bigger perspective, then you can start to see things from a healed perspective or a wholeness. It's like you being an adult watching a young child in tears over their toy being lost, you know that that little dime store toy is going to graduate from being a $6 piece of plastic to a $60,000 car soon enough. You know this as the adult. You know where this is going, those tears of that kid with their broken toy. Your perspective is what we're shifting here for yourself. Sanity, reason, is the higher, larger perspective. The book is teaching this to you. You do not leave insanity by going somewhere else. No. What you do, you leave... Okay, oh wait, there's a great... want to see it? Do we have time? Yep, well, barely. Wait, we can just read the next sentence. But there's a great sentence in the earlier book I was going to take. Let's just read the next sentence. You leave insanity by accepting reason where the madness was. That's what a miracle is for. A miracle is a correction in perception. And also, Tim was describing changing his thoughts. You see, he got the relief because he saw that he was not thinking correctly about his thought. He was able to, he wasn't lying to himself when he said, I don't have to think this way. He saw the meaninglessness of his thoughts and could just let them go. You see, forgiveness, you don't forgive something you think is true. Think about that for a moment. You never forgive something you think is true. See, that would be a lie. That would be a lie if you think that somebody doesn't deserve punishment for actually harming you. They purposefully harmed you just to make your life miserable, and that's what they did, just to hurt you. And it did hurt you, and you lost something because of it. But now you're going to forgive them? See, that's a lie. Masako.
Okay, good. I just want to bring the conversation down to earth.
Good.
Okay, all right. So for me, forgiveness, letting go, choosing the truth, I want to underscore how courageous we all are to make that choice for the truth, for reason. Okay? Because we have been growing up to always protect ourselves, right? When the ego thinks, oh my God, they're coming after me, right? We wear masks, trying to fit in. I mean, we have all kinds of facades that we put on. And as I began to read this material and try to relate to it in my own life, in this body, and also being a spirit, right? Being part of the one, it really wasn't very easy. It was extremely difficult, extremely challenging, because in the moment that when I had to decide, there was no one there giving me a little pep talk, right? Like, right. Hey, take a risk. It's going to pay off. No. All I had was my default thoughts or my egoic thoughts saying to me, boy, you sure you want to do this and just expose yourself? Yeah, it sounds pretty good. You want to love and forgive. But what if they come back and they're not open? They're not receptive to your love. So, So the thing that I really want to stress is that for all of us, making that choice is act of bravery and kudos. I mean, I respect and admire making those choices because it's not easy.
And at some point when you are brave enough to make one of those choices, and you discover a sense of peace, mm-hmm. a sense of certainty arrives after that courageous step, then maybe you'll recognize the only reason you would make the choice again is if you want to be happy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is the way to happiness. Forgiveness is the key to happiness. And judgment is the key to misery. This is the truth of A Course in Miracles. And now it's up to you to decide each day in each interaction. What is this for? Is this for you to be more free? Or is this for you to judge somebody and something else and stay more in the world? You have that power. It has arrived. It's in your hands. Course in Miracles is in your hands.
And I think for me, the more I practice letting go and forgiving and begin to get a taste of the world, you know, it's sort of like living my truth, heaven on earth. The more I sense that, the more I step into it, I realize this feels pretty damn good. <You know? laughs> After all this arming up, protecting myself,
right?
To be able to open myself up and begin to trust. Thank you, Barbara. Begin to trust that, you know what? What's unreal can't really hurt you. But I begin to really get grounded in that, you know.
Yes, a new grounding. I like that word. It's a new grounding that wasn't possible until you had this breath of the spiritual air, I call it, and you reset.
Yeah.
What's possible? Luann, you want to say one more thing before we close?
I know you mean this, Misaka, but when I hear the word forgive, or let go, I get it triggered. And the reason I think that is because if it's not real, then there's nothing to let go of. And that's basically what I want to say.
Well, you know, the practicality is that your habits still are with you. You have your spiritual awakening of freedom, but you still have these habitual thoughts that pop up. And so what you're releasing the nothingness for being nothing. The thoughts still pop in your head. But now that you've had your miracle in place, you can say, oh, that's nothing. And you recognize the nothing. If what Luann's describing, there is a time comes when you don't even have the judgmental thought. You don't even notice the anger. The words are there. The eyebrows are lifted. They might even have your name mixed in with some four-letter words. And you cannot need to forgive any of that because you see that it's clearly that person calling for love, not an attack on you. So Luann's absolutely right when you're there. Probably you'll have some reaction from your ego and you'll go, oh, wait a minute. This doesn't even matter. I'm not harmed by those words and that. That's like what Tim was describing when he caught himself. He busted his ego. Along the way, you will have to forgive. See, the miracle's not sufficient. The miracle deals with your erroneous perception, always with the errors only. Now the work begins. See, starts with a miracle. The work is really forgiveness. Because you've habitually, you're habitually as an ego in a body, time and space, judging and navigating and trying to survive. The miracle allows you to stop your stinking thinking. Forgiveness is when you actually choose to stop your stinking thinking. And the holy instant is that breath of fresh air saying, I really am free. So everybody, do that and be free and live that way. Thank you for studying A Course in Miracles with me. And thank you so much for everybody's depth in this and working the material at the level we do on these Thursday nights. It's absolutely precious. And let's do it again next week with the next paragraph.
Okay. I won't be here next week, Andrew.
Okay, I will miss you then.
I will miss everybody. You all. Thank you, everyone. Good to good see night. You, Masako.
Thank you, everybody.
Good night, Kim. Good night, Kenny.